Hello and welcome back to The More From Grace. We've had an exciting second week of the Women's Six Nations. Scotland came close against France, England blew away Wales, and Italy scraped past Ireland. I'm joined today with Ricky.
Hello, good to be back.
Let's talk about the action. Let's get started with Scotland versus France. Scotland were ahead 5-3 at half-time. What were your thoughts on their brave performance, Ricky?
I was actually lying on a sunbed watching the game and it was absolutely joyful. Seeing a Scotland side who was resilient, their pack early on was putting the pressure on France. And obviously the first try made it really count. France in the end, they showed their superiority and eventually got the win, but it was impressive from Scotland.
No, 100%. I think France really showed why they're sort of seen as one of those top two sides in the tournament in that second half. But it's really encouraging seeing Scotland really be able to go toe-to-toe. And it wasn't until the very end that Scotland got that last try that really sort of buried the game. The thing that was quite concerning for Scotland, though, was their kicking. I obviously put Helen Nelson as my fantasy pick, thinking after her round one kicking that she was going to really have another brilliant performance, get those penalties, get those conversions. And that just wasn't the case, was it?
No, unfortunately not. I mean, yes, the wind was a factor, but if you look at the placement of the ball, where it was on the field, it's not really acceptable to miss it. First was a pen, second was a conversion. That's five extra points. That would have put a lot of extra pressure on France. You can't be missing that.
It's not just extra pressure, as I say. They only actually took the game away from being a one-score game at the very end. So if they'd had got those points, then it would have been a completely different match by that point. And who knows, we could be talking about a Scotland win.
Eventually, their quality and the power got it done against a very resilient Scottish side, didn't they, Henry?
Yeah, but as I say, it's really encouraging to see that Scotland taking that step up, because it wasn't like it was a French performance that was lacking. It was just Scotland really took it to them. I think that there was a couple of instances of sort of lapse of concentration, but that I think sort of comes with a team that's on the up, as Scotland are. For example, from the kickoff for the second half, Scotland kicked it off and then France booted it back to Meryl Smith and she just dropped it into touch, which is sort of a mistake you can't be making at the top level, but obviously that's the kind of thing that will come. It's just those little errors that are sort of letting Scotland down at the moment. But I think it's a really promising performance from them.
Absolutely.
So the next match was England versus Wales. I was sat in the Harlequins media room watching it over the screen through a load of journalists, just trying to pick out what I could before I could get back and actually watch the whole game. England had their biggest ever attendance outside of Twickenham, with almost 20,000 people showing up to Ashton Gate. I mentioned it last week, I thought it was a really good location for a match like this. I think maybe next year if they play, or in 2 years' time when they play Wales again, maybe Ashton Gate would be a great location again. It's like the biggest stadium in the southwest. And being right by that Welsh border really encourages more Welsh fans to make the journey over as well and create a really good atmosphere.
And a good rivalry too.
100%. It's sort of a rivalry that obviously we see in the men's game. So much is built around it. And it's a shame that we don't necessarily get to have that in the women's game. But I think in a few years, we definitely will. And yeah, 46-10. What a performance from England, particularly in the second half. Obviously, we've spoken about it before we hit record. Abby Dow and Ellie Kildan were just on fire. I'd go as far as to say Ellie Kildan is probably the best fullback on the planet of either men's and women's rugby right now.
It's a very, very, very bold call, but perhaps, yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to say that, but I am going to talk about how ridiculous Abby Dow was again. Like, she's that first try for, was it Maud Muir? That pace down the right flank. Oof, no one could stop it, could they?
It was a shame that she didn't get it down herself, because that would have been, I mean, it already is a highlights reel try, but that would have been even more so. That could have been a contender for World Try of the Year, possibly.
Well then, what about the actual potential World Try of the
Year? The actual potential World Try of the Year, the Ellie Kildan finish for her second try. That was It was something else.
Even the first one was brilliant.
Oh, 100%. But that was insane. How many rugby players can be barged into touch by, what, three players and still be able to put the ball down before going out?
Like, it was like defying gravity. And she just somehow... half her body was outside of the lines. And she still got it down. It was ridiculous.
It was so good. I think one real strong performance from Wales, I think, was Clecky George pulling the strings at fly half. We've seen her do it for Gloucester Hartbury throughout this season. She's been really good form, but she was pretty good from the tee, and yeah, she was just fantastic. She obviously got the conversion, got the penalty when it was required. Actually, put Wales ahead in the fifth minute, although that was rather short lived with Maud Muir going straight over straight afterwards, but. But I thought she had a really promising performance. And I would actually say the other player, I think, is probably the most important player to the Welsh side. And I don't know if it's a controversial statement, given that she started on the bench, is Ciara Bevan. Because her expertise, her experience, I think it's the sort of thing that is invaluable for a team on the rise, as Wales are.
What did you think of John Mitchell's performance, as in his second game in the Six Nations now?
I think it's really promising. We spoke about it with Jess Hayden when she was on the pod, and it's really encouraging seeing how he's sort of taken a bit like a duck to water to coaching the women's game. He sort of accepted the differences, and it accepted that, you know, he can't go in with the same philosophy, with the same mindset. And I don't know if you've seen this, but England do their O2 Inside Line series every week, and one clip of it that's sort of gone round, they've clipped up and put on their Twitter, on their Instagram and everything, is England actually had a darts night, which looked like real fun. They split the team into different like teams within the Red Roses, and they just basically played a big game of darts, and they had John Mitchell coming in with a mohawk, everyone was cheering, and it just looked like so much fun.
Yeah, a good team mentality, isn't it? One thing to pick up on is that when we were speaking with Jess Hayden as well, she was talking about how there'd be a lot more play from out the back as opposed to using the pack. How would you evaluate the back's performance as opposed to the forwards?
It's so encouraging. Like, I know I've used the word encouraging a lot so far, but I think it really was. You know, England are a team that they're the best in the world besides maybe New Zealand, although WXV sort of says otherwise. They're one of the top sides in the world, and they are that cut above. But you're not going to stay that cut above if you don't develop your game. And we know they've got such a strong forward pack, and they've sort of almost had individual star power in the backs, but not necessarily sort of combined and built a team around it. I think when you've got players like Jess Breach, like Meg Jones, like Abby Dow, Ellie Kildon, and just the number of brilliant scrum halves we've got, that really, it's about time that England really start to develop that back game. And yeah, it's still the individual power. You know, Abby Dow's breakaway right at the start for Maud Muir. But yeah, England really are diversifying, and I think it's really, really coming off. And obviously the final match last weekend was Ireland versus Italy. Italy scraped a 27-21 victory at the RDS Arena. What were your thoughts on that?
I thought Ireland played pretty well, to be honest. They were very, very close to getting their first Six Nations win in almost 2 years. But obviously Italy raced away with it in the initial stages. And then from there on, unfortunately, it was like Ireland were always trying to catch up, and it was just too little today.
Yeah, it was a really good game of rugby. I thought Beatrice Ragone was excellent from the tee. She obviously missed a couple of conversions, but you know, for an outside centre to be kicking like that. I think it's interesting, obviously, seeing the role that someone like Sylvia Tarani, although she went off after 15 minutes, sort of the role that she's been having within the team. Obviously, she's been playing a lot of loose head prop for Harlequins this season, but she started the Six Nations playing hooker. Now she's back to playing loose head prop. But of course, there was the try that should have been, but wasn't. Tell us more about that, rookie.
Well, it's just... You had what, four numbers on the outside? And, well, obviously Italy are attacking, and you got four numbers on the outside. You've got one pass to make. Rule one of rugby, don't throw it forward. It's literally, you could have played the simplest pass inside, and that would have been game over. I suppose it made for a more exciting spectacle, didn't it? But with the last minute try from Casey Corrigan, but
yeah, it was a shame for them. But obviously, you've got to get those basics right, and it's that know how when you're playing rugby. Obviously, I'm not playing at that level. I never will be.
Neither will I.
But it's easier to say after the fact as well. But just throw the pass properly, like.
But if you've got four numbers outside,
yeah,
I was three or four numbers anyway, and you've got one defender banging, you don't have to loop it all the way over. It's just nah.
It's just basic rugby.
I don't want to discredit from the Italian performance, though. It was a very good performance.
Oh, 100%. Like, to come away with a win, particularly, obviously we say that Ireland have really struggled in recent years. But, again, they're another team on the up, as they should be.
It's making the Women's Six Nations just more and more exciting, isn't it?
100%. And I think it'll be interesting to see how Ireland move forward from this, knowing that they have that potential within them, knowing that they can get that result when it comes to it. And moving on to this next weekend of fixtures, we start off on the 13th with Scotland versus England at the Hive Stadium, and it's set to be a record crowd in Scotland.
Sold out, 7,700, I don't know the exact figure, but it's going to be absolutely phenomenal, isn't it? It's just great for Scottish women's rugby up there as well, and they're playing England.
Yeah, it's going to be so good, I think there's real potential in the next few years. Obviously, Hive Stadium is just outside of Murrayfield. I think there's real potential that they will be playing those matches in Murrayfield in the years to come. And even if it's just, you know, start with selling the bottoms here and then move up from there, because Scotland's sort of got a weird... It's in a weird state because their club stadiums, the Hive Stadium and Scotstown, they're not big grounds. They're only 5,000, 6,000, 7,000, 8,000. So the step up from there is either do you rent a football stadium or do you just go straight to Murrayfield? I think maybe you do just go straight to Murrayfield.
Yeah, well, I don't see why not. I mean, maybe security and gate issues might be a problem, but it's only going to get bigger and bigger, isn't it?
100%. And then next up is Ireland versus Wales at Musgrave Park in Cork. I think that could be the one that Ireland really target after their match against Italy. They've proven that they can sort of kick it at least the mid-table level. And Wales, you know, they've played well. They played well against England, despite the scoreline. But they are a bit of a wounded animal. And maybe Ireland, if they start off strong, they could really put in a strong performance and possibly get the win.
Ireland aren't just there to be battered, are they? They really, really want to compete at this next level because they haven't been good, but they're getting better, and they're getting better. But I suppose whilst you argue as well, Wales did put up a good performance despite only conceding 46 points, but that's because the Red Roses are just ridiculously good.
Yeah, and then one of the other things with Ireland as well is that they've actually recalled Clonia Maloney from her test exile. And 30-year-old hooker, she's been one of the top players in the Premier 15s, now the Women's Premiership, for quite a few years now. So I think that's a real positive change for Ireland. Like, she was captain of the team, and now she's back.
Wasn't it a two-year exile?
Yeah, so she'd made comments about the director of rugby of Ireland at the time, which didn't go down well, whether or not she was right. And yeah, she's now back, and everyone's applauding it, and it's only positive for her.
The response on social media has been fantastic around it.
And finally, for the weekend, we've got France versus Italy in Paris. I think this will be a bit more one-sided. I think France will probably kick into the second gear a little bit more this time. Italy, again, they won't be taken for mugs. They will put on a strong performance, but I think it will be a somewhat convincing France victory.
I feel like France will want to establish a bit of dominance at some point. They haven't been particularly good so far. Maybe this will be the game to just kick, as you said, into second, maybe third gear, who knows?
Yeah, they've been good, but they've not been quite fantastic yet. This is the time for them to actually really kick on and grow as a side, in the same way that obviously the Red Roses have sort of developed their game. France have a little bit, but I think now's time for France to really just take that step forwards. So, on to the fantasy segment. You know, it's been another interesting round. Obviously, I put a lot of faith into into Helen Nelson, and it hadn't really quite paid off. I also put a bit of faith into Jess Breach, and again, she's weirdly, for a try scorer that's so prolific, she's had a bit of a quiet Six Nations, even though she has been contributing in other ways.
She got the assist for Abby Dow's try.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, it's been interesting. I'm not quite sure what my team's going to look like this weekend, but I do know who my fantasy selection is going to be for this week, and it will be Ellie Kildun. I've sort of ignored her a little bit, but you've got to go for the obvious choice, don't you? She's proven time after time how good she is, and she's a proven point scorer when it comes to fantasy.
Absolutely. Well, I was just looking at my team now. My second rowers in fantasy got a collective of, let me do the maths here, sorry, 92 points, just two players in the second row. And that leads me on to my fantasy pick. If she starts, Rosie Gallagher.
Yeah, that's a solid choice.
She got 57 points last week. It's ridiculous.
I think what's really interesting with those, as you mentioned, with the second row, with the English second rowers, how they sort of split about. Some of them can play in the back row. Obviously, we've seen Poppy Cleals played everywhere in the scrum except for Hooker for England, which is an insane feat to be able to say that you've done. But no, I do think Rosie Gallagher is a fantastic choice there. And let's get on to the news. We've been joined by our late arrival, Will. How are you, Will?
How's it going, boys? Pleasure to be back.
About bloody time you joined.
It's been a while.
So it's been a busy week for news, really. First bit of news is World Rugby have successfully prosecuted the first troll from the Rugby World Cup. It was, I believe, a 22-year-old social worker from Australia has appeared in magistrates' court, charged with verbal abuse of the TMO from England's match against Samoa during the Rugby World Cup. What do we think of that?
Oh, I mean, there's no place for it in the game. There's no place for it in sport in general, isn't there? It's obviously a shocking instance again of a troll going onto social media and thinking that, you know, he or she could get away with it. And quite rightly, World Rugby, you know, has clamped down on this particular instance. Don't get me wrong. I'm sure that there's plenty of instances which don't get caught. Let's just hope that it proves as a warning for any future trolls, social media trolls, not to write any, you know, disgusting and any bigotry online. There's no place for it.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right there. It will serve as a really good precedent going forwards, not only on the powers that World Rugby could have in clamping down on this, but also that I think once word starts to get around, people might just start to think twice and then go, do I really need to send this abusive message? Obviously, if you've seen the whistleblowers documentary that World Rugby produced, obviously you've got refs having their families threatened. Like their wives being DM'd saying, like, watch out for your husband's, like, well-being from now on. Like, we can't be having that. And obviously, the most severe cases need to be punished.
Well, I think Wayne Barnes, in his retirement, was saying a lot of that was to do with the abuse that he was receiving himself. It's just so sad to see. And it's really good to see that World Rugby are clamping down on it, setting a statement.
Definitely. And there's been a few matches actually announced over the past couple of weeks. We've seen Leicester Tigers have announced a friendly fixture next month against the Georgian side Black Lion. It'll be the homecoming for Richard Cockerill, who's now head coach for Georgia. We've seen the Red Roses have announced a match against New Zealand as a one-off standalone, I guess, autumn international against New Zealand at Twickenham in September. So that'll be another really interesting fixture to see just how much they can sell out Twickenham, particularly, you know, with England versus Ireland coming up next weekend. It'll be good to see that progress from last weekend, last year's 58,000 at Twickenham, to see if we can come closer to that 82,000 goal come World Cup final. And finally, we've got France versus World 15 that's absolutely star-studded. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I mean, World 15, of course, a different team to the Barbarians side. But again, I think more importantly in this instance, it's actually the location of the game. So we saw the other day, L'Aviron Bayonnais played a match in Bilbao, which is where this France against World 15 match would be played too. And there was a real desire and a very good turnout in the Basque Country there. And this is just going to be another opportunity to bring more rugby into Spain. And who knows, it might be just a little test there again for a potential World Cup in Portugal and Spain in the coming years.
I think that'd be so much fun. Obviously, it's not the first time France have taken matches outside of France and brought them into Spain. We saw quite a few years ago now, the top 14 final was actually played in Barcelona at the Nou Camp, and they sold it out, and it was 99,000 people showing up for a French top 14 final. That's an incredible achievement.
Mm.
Possibly one of the greatest attendances in rugby history, let alone club rugby. And part of the justification for that was all the sides in the top 14 that year, I think it's slightly different now with La Rochelle, but all the sides in the top 14, besides the two Parisian clubs, actually were closer in location to Barcelona than they are to Paris. So the justification was, what's the point in having the final in Paris if it's so far away?
Mm-hmm.
It'd be like, obviously we see it in rugby league where the Challenge Cup final's in Wembley every year, and there's some teams going, why are we travelling down to London every year if all the clubs are northern? In the same way here, why would all these southern clubs come to Paris every year?
Don't forget London Broncos.
Yeah.
Although they're doing...
No danger of running for the final.
Pretty dismal this year.
I guess the biggest talking point from this week has been, it seems as though in 2028 we're going to finally see this Club World Cup come to fruition. It'll be, from the rumours, it sounds like it'll be the top eight Champions Cup sides from that season. So there won't be a Champions Cup knockout round. There won't be a final. There won't be a winner of the Champions Cup. But the sides that then get knocked out from the round of 16 will then go into the Challenge Cup. And they'll, I guess, become the European champions of the year. But these top eight sides are then going to face off against the top six Super Rugby sides, as well as two invitational sides thought to be from Japan. What are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, I mean, just first off, it does sound exciting, doesn't it? And it has been touted for a long time that the Northern Hemisphere sides will be taking on the Super Rugby club teams. And yeah, on the surface, it sounds fantastic. But we also have to take into consideration just how brutal of a season that would set up. And it was Will Keller actually of the Times that pointed out that for an elite player then between August 2027 and May 2028, a season would look a little bit like this. So you'd have your Rugby World Cup warm-ups, followed of course by the World Cup itself, then the domestic season would start, Champions Cup pools would start as well, then you'd of course have the Christmas League game, Six Nations, the domestic run-in, playoffs, and then the Club World Cup on top of that. Not to forget, of course, the summer tours that follow for the international sides too. And in the current climate, players are just being asked to play more and more matches. And is it sustainable for player welfare and where injuries are concerned? Concussions as well. I think there's just going to be more and more research done into that over the next few years. So will be interesting from that side of things if all of those respective tournaments can go ahead, and whether there will have to be a consultation there as to whether the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup tournaments will have to take a break for those years.
Yeah, I think player welfare is a really important discussion to have around it. Obviously, within England, there's a limit on the number of games players are allowed to play, and it looks like actually Mauro Itoje, depending on how much more he plays for Saracens, I think it's 30 matches a season they're allowed to play, and he looks like he's played 28 so far. So that there's a real chance he might not actually be allowed to play on England's summer tour to New Zealand, although I think there'll be some workarounds and he'll obviously be allowed to play. But yeah, I think that's probably the reason that they've sort of turned around and said there'll be no Champions Cup knockout stage, because then it'll be a knockout tournament itself. It'll be almost, in some ways, not really many more matches for teams to really have to deal with. But it's a bit of a concern. But I think that's sort of how they've come to this conclusion, is it's almost the best of all the scenarios.
But the logistics are an absolute nightmare. Like, let's just even look at this. What the Bulls are playing Northampton coming up. How many flights was it?
Yeah, it's a silly number.
8 flights. That is just utterly ridiculous.
It's spread across, I think, 3 different airlines as well.
Yeah. It's just, how is it all going to be doable? I don't know.
I mean, what I'd love to see would be, if a Club World Cup would come into play, is to set it up in one of those developing tier 2 nations, you know, your Portugal, Spain, even Georgia, why not? But just imagine that, you know, you're flying over to Portugal for the summer, a whole month of the best clubs in the world going at it in a sort of a knockout style. It reminds me most of the Champions League, where just after COVID, they played those sort of back-to-back knockout matches all in Portugal, I think it was at the time. And it would be great to do something similar, perhaps, for the Club World Cup.
Yeah, I think it will be interesting to see how it's done. It looks like it will be a Northern Hemisphere tournament, but that doesn't really mean a lot. I've got my concerns. It could be Saudi Arabia. They want their slice of rugby, I think. Are they going to go for the Club World Cup? I think it's in their time frame, and there's a strong argument that actually it's a central location for the Southern Hemisphere and Northern Hemisphere teams.
I'm just going to leave that.
But anyway, my other concern is qualification. Obviously, we know it looks like it will be the top 8 teams from the Champions Cup and the top 6 teams from Super Rugby. But then 2 invitational sides, would that be the top 2 from the Japan League 1? Or how is that going to be decided? Because if it is going to truly be a World Cup, it has to be the best teams. And there's concerns that perhaps the 6th best team in Super Rugby isn't equal to the 8th best team in Europe. But again, that will be something that we will see in the years to come. And that will be something that just gets ironed out as they go through different iterations of it. But, you know, I would love to see, in an ideal world, like a Major League Rugby All-Stars team play this. They wouldn't get very far, I don't think, but it'd be a spectacle to see. And obviously on this, in the article that was published about this, it mentioned about the possibility of a women's European Championship, which I think that's progress. It's probably coming up to time in the next few years. We will obviously see teams from the PWR. It'll be Celtic Challenge teams, it looks like. It'll be teams from the French Elite One or Elite Un. And I think there's talk of maybe a couple of Spanish or Portuguese sides, or Spanish or Italian sides in there. But I think this is progress, don't you think?
Yeah, it's massive for women's rugby, isn't it? I mean, in a European competition, it just improves the game as a whole. And you get to see the best against the best, not in the international level, but at club level, it'd be so good.
I think that's the problem with women's rugby, in a way, is that because there's so few leagues in men's rugby, really, when you actually look at it. There's so few leagues, it almost becomes so isolated. And in a way, you can think of the PWR as just sort of this only pro league in the world, which isn't true. There's leagues in, there's Super Rugby or Piki, Super Rugby Women's in New Zealand and Australia. And obviously, we've got the French leagues as well, which are quite strong as well. And yeah, I think this is the logical next step. And who knows, maybe we'll get to a point where it's more sustainable than the men's game in the next few years.
Well, do you remember what Brian Moore said? He was like, the women's game has a blank canvas to use, and it could set a standard that's just so much better than the men's game.
Yeah, exactly. And the final bit of news, we'll just have a little quick look ahead to this weekend's Champions Cup quarterfinals, because I know I'm certainly excited.
Well, yeah, on that point, of course, it will be the Harlequins heading down, back down to the southwest of France, where Bordeaux will be hoping to put another 40-odd points on an English side. And, of course, they absolutely obliterated Sarri's on the weekend. You know, there's no doubt about it. That French back line of, you know, Lukaku, the two wingers in Peno and Bielbiaré, Deportes, Burros, God, they were at their scintillating best, weren't they? Just absolutely carving the Sarri's defence wide open, who again struggled down in the Stade Chabon-Delmas. But yeah, Quinns have really got their work cut out this weekend, for my liking. I know, Henry, you're about to chime in here saying, no, we can do it, but I just think it's going to be too tough of a task for Quinns to head down to that cauldron of French rugby there in the southwest, and it's going to be a real tough task for them to try and do the one over on UBB.
Yeah, French teams, as we know, are so strong at home. We've seen that with Bordeaux, and Bordeaux, in their two matches against Saracens this season, they've put 100 points on them, which, who can do that? Like that, Bordeaux have just proven themselves in this competition to just be so strong when they need to be. I think, as a Harlequins fan, you sort of just got to take it as it is. Like, you know, it's an incredible achievement to get this far, and I think Bordeaux are rightly favourites for this match, but if any team can cause an upset, it is Harlequins, so my fingers will be crossed.
Oh, it's sad to be a fantastic spectacle, of course, and another one of those spectacles will be another meeting between Leinster and La Rochelle, which has become just a bit of a reoccurrence, isn't it? A yearly reoccurrence between those sides. I think it's 5 times they've met in the past 4 years, including, of course, back-to-back finals, where La Rochelle have trumped Leinster in those 2 games. But, of course, it's going to be another opportunity for Leinster in what is set to be a packed-out Aviva Stadium once more. I think more than 50,000, more than likely, due to be in attendance there. So, yeah, it's gonna be a great spectacle, again, between two of the best, very best club sides in the Northern Hemisphere.
I think it's really interesting how often they meet. There's almost an argument that Leinster's biggest rival is no longer Munster, it's La Rochelle. But, yeah, it's a really interesting one, obviously. La Rochelle got the performance at the weekend. Who did they beat? Yeah, La Rochelle just about got past the Stormers. They're the first team to ever win away in South Africa in Champions Cup history, which is an achievement in and of itself, getting that 1-point win. I think the fact that it's at the Aviva sort of slightly favours Leinster a bit. They've got that home territory, and I think if it was a home match for La Rochelle, they'd probably rightly be favourites. But it's a match that can go either way. I think I'd slightly tip Leinster, but it's going to be a hell of a match.
Talking about repetitiveness, obviously Leicester and Leinster played each other in back-to-back European games. Do you think the format needs to be revamped?
I think we're all in agreement that needs to be looked at again, because you just can't be having the same knockout games as had already been played in the pool stages itself. It just doesn't engage a casual viewer or even you know, a diehard supporter as much as the old system. And I think just the old system did work so well. It would be great to go back to it. I think I love pool stages, and then there's, you know, that set. The winner of Group A would play the second place of Group B. I just think it's a much more streamlined system, and of course that as well would take away the risk of playing the same game in the knockout stages as had already been played in a group match.
I think there's a real argument that, you know, European rugby doesn't need a round of 16. In a lot of ways, you know, it's great to have more teams in a knockout round. It sort of opens up the competition a bit more, but I don't think when we've got three leagues taking part, it's necessary. I think it always used to be just straight into the quarterfinals, and I think maybe that's the way to go back to.
Yeah, and just a quick look at the last two Champions Cup matches. We've got Northampton playing the Bulls. We've had their travel issues, haven't they? And then, of course, Toulouse, who absolutely demolished Racing on the weekend, playing Exeter, who triumphed at a very blustery Sandy Park. It was quite a comical watch, wasn't it?
Yeah. I think in both of these matches, the home sides have to be the favourites. Northampton have been so strong during the Premiership this season. I think the Bulls might, with their travel woes, might just struggle that a little bit. Not to write them off at all, but just I think Northampton have just been so good. Maybe the Bulls would just be put slightly off as a result. And I think Toulouse are probably the best team in Europe at the moment. Certainly the best team, maybe not in the French league, but certainly the best team at those in those tight matches.
Mm.
You know, they've got Antoine Dupont back. They've got Romain Untermac. Like, you just can't write them off, surely.
King Horn at fullback too. He's looking in imperious form at the moment. But yeah, as you say, Henry, it's going to be a real task for any side to beat Toulouse in Europe this season. They are just looking that, well, one step ahead, aren't they? I mean, a potential Toulouse-Bordeaux semi-final does really whet the appetite.
I think you mean Toulouse-Harlequins.
But yeah, I mean, the Champions Cup and Challenge Cup, of course, you can't forget. It's going to be a real spectacle this weekend. And I love the fact that there are back-to-back European matches happening in this, you know, two-week period. It's a real, it does really whet the appetite, as I already mentioned, and yeah, I'm just really excited to see how all the games pan out. I'm sure it's going to be absolutely enthralling.
It's certainly going to be a really exciting weekend of rugby, as it so often is, but this has been The Mall from Grace. I've been Henry, I've been joined by Ricky and Will.
Thank you, it's been a pleasure.
See you next time.
And we will see you next time.